Welcome to a special episode of AU Manufacturing Conversations with Brent Belinsky, featuring one of the companies we're putting forward as part of our quest to identify and celebrate Australia's 50 most innovative manufacturers for 2024. This campaign has been made possible through the generous support of MYOB, the original business management software developers. Nothing beats the OG. As well as the CSIRO and the New South Wales Government's Advanced Manufacturing Research Facility.
Graham, thank you very much for joining us here on AU Manufacturing Conversations. It's a pleasure to finally have Loftex on the program. Welcome, and good to meet you.
Thanks, Brent. Great to be here.
So the first question we like to ask all our guests, you included, is how did you get here and what do you make?
Fantastic. So Bloctex is a textile resource recovery facility. And what that means is we take unwanted or unwearable clothing and textiles, and we're focused predominantly at the blended materials, so polyester, cotton. So if you think of your everyday, your sheets, your towels, your workwear, a whole lot of stuff. Most of our clothes are blended these days. And we've developed a chemical separation process that allows us to unlock the cotton from the polyester and remanufacture those back into raw materials. So instead of going to landfill, we can turn them back into really valuable resources to go back into many products. But I've had quite an interesting journey previously in media, 20 plus years in media, moved overseas with my wife's career, and so spent a bit of time at home with my children, which was wonderful. And during that time, I started to look for new ventures. I also discovered some sport called triathlons and marathons. And so over a period of time, I did quite a few of those. We went from Asia to the UK. And one day I was kind of going through wardrobe, but it was literally full of these T-shirts from all these events that I'd competed in. And it was quite interesting because you would wear them after the event or on the plane home so people knew that you'd done the event, but you wouldn't wear them any other time because they didn't fit properly. And if you wore them, they kind of smelled pretty badly. So for me, it made sense that there was actually an opportunity. I'm racing with thousands of people, and I did a sort of a straw poll with some of my friends, and they did the same thing. They didn't wear these shirts. So I thought, well, there's actually a business here. So unlike most of our wardrobes, they're made of 100% polyester, 100% cotton or a polyester cotton blend. Maybe some spandex to kind of make some stretch. But when you do some research, you realize that these fibers actually have quite a large impact on the planet. And so I kind of went, well, there's an opportunity to maybe make some product here. So fast forward over a few years, I launched a sustainable sportswear brand, made our own fabrics, won some awards, and we were reasonably successful, but not in the sort of the scope of being the next Nike. But what it did introduce me into the fashion and textile industry, and I realized that there was a phenomenal amount of garments made each year, approaching 130 billion garments per year around the world, and most of that's going into landfill. So I was kind of going, well, I knew economically what it costs to make fiber, what it costs to make fabric, and what it costs to make a garment. And at the end of the life, or if we didn't like the color or it didn't fit us, we were throwing it away. So I saw there was a business opportunity there. And at that time, I met my business partner, Adrian Jones, who has a background in the fashion textile industry. So between us, 5.5 years ago, Bloctex was formed.
And so let's get it out of the way early and good. Soft is your technology, and that's key to everything you've just said and key to understanding what your business is about. Tell me a bit, please, about how this process works. Some info about, I guess, the kinds of volumes you can manage with it in of textile waste and some stuff around that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So the technology we're using that we've based our soft process separation of fiber technology is really nascent. Textile recycling is, from a chemical separation point of view, is incredibly new. Like, we're one of the leading companies in the world, and there's only a handful of us who are sort of at pilot scale or just got our labs. Bloctex itself, we've got a small or an early stage commercial scale plant. We've got a 4,000 ton capacity. Now, that is massive compared to what's kind of going on around the world. But when you've got upwards of 800,000 tons of textiles going into Australian landfills alone, it's still a drop in the ocean. And the way our technology works, we've combined advanced chemistry, so a stringent chemical process to unlock the cotton from the polyester without damaging those two materials or creating any harmful byproducts. And then that moves into a manufacturing process. So advanced manufacturing to take a whole bunch of materials at scale. We're batching upwards of 1,000 kilograms per batch. So we're moving a small car around our plant every 90 minutes. And if there's an analogy for the listeners, if you ever pack your 5 kilogram home washing machine incorrectly with your towels, once those towels get wet, the washing machine starts to bounce around, right? And so you can kind of understand the scale of us moving wet clothes around our production facility at sort of 1,000 kilograms. And so what we've had to develop is not only the chemistry and scale that out of a laboratory, but we also had to then design the equipment, the bespoke equipment to go into our factory to work at a commercial scale. And that's what we've been working on over the last 2.5 years. And this is what we've now brought into operations at 4,000 tons. And as of this week, to schedule, which my investors are very happy with, we're now moving into stage two. And that stage two will increase the capacity from 4,000 tons per annum to 10,000 tons per annum, which still quite small, is still massive in the scale of where we are in the early stage. I guess from another analogy, this is the start of a textile recycling industry. And effectively, we're kind of like the looking forward to the car industry. In 10 years' time, 15 years' time, textile recycling will be exactly like the way we recycle plastics.
And so you mentioned not much in the way of byproducts produced. I've read elsewhere that you recover about 95% of what material goes in. Could you just clarify a little about what's unrecovered and what, you know, if any byproducts are created?
Yeah, when Adrian and I started this business, we had a real mandate to recover both the polyester from the process, but also not to create another wastage. And there's easier routes to market, I can tell you. But our process effectively unlocks the cotton from the polyester. The polyester is untouched. So whatever goes into that, if we're talking 1,000 kilograms, 500 kilograms of polyester is untouched. That's easy. The cotton, as it's broken down into to our cellulose slurry, some of those cellulose particles can be quite fine. And so that sort of ends up either undetected and goes out in wastewater. And so our only byproduct at this stage is wastewater. There is some dyes released from our clothes because not everybody's clothes are 100% white, and even white is dyed itself. And so we've got an ability to recover those dyes as well to go out. So we'll have some dye wastage, which will go to a waste-to-energy plant, and the rest is wastewater. So it's a really effective process. We get up to 95% recovery, so pretty much what goes in comes out. And then we've got an ability to recover up to 85% of all the liquids we use in our plant and recycle that around. And eventually there is a, you know, there is a discharge within the limits of our wastewater contract. So it didn't make any sense to be an environmental company and not operate environmentally. But equally, I think what we have to say is I can't look over the fence and say, what did the guy do before us? We are the pioneers to this business. We are the cutting edge. And so every day we improve on our process and we validate our process to improve. And so that for us and the team is really exciting, that every day we're just that little bit better than we were the day before, but we also learn more and more. And I think the other opportunity we've had with our suppliers is to then, as our suppliers have understood what we're trying to achieve, we can start to push into them in regards to innovating their own products to make their products fit within the usage that we need in our plant.
We'd like to take another moment now to acknowledge our sponsors, MYOB, as well as the CSIRO and the New South Wales Government's Advanced Manufacturing Research Facility. There would be no 50 Most Innovative without these guys. Thanks again for making this campaign possible.
It's all well and good to be able to run a business focused on recycling and not creating an impact on the environment itself, but obviously to continue doing so, you have to be profitable and you have to pay the bills. Tell me about if you're profitable yet and some of the economics around collecting, processing, transforming into other products such as hydro mulches and whatever, and you know what it looks like from that standpoint.
Yeah, of course, a business is there to create profit for the shareholders, and we're absolutely focused on that. Recycling is a great way to go broke because you can find plenty of waste, but you've got to go and find the customers who want those products that you create. But equally, you've got to have a process that also isn't uneconomical or unenvironmentally friendly. So that was one of the tenets of when we started the business. We numbers, and if we couldn't make it for X, then it was kind of, we weren't going to progress. We managed to do that. But equally, as we've started to grow the business, we've got the business that happens here at the facility, which is our separation process and our remanufacturing process. But importantly, we also have built here in Australia a whole business before the gate. And to explain how that works, we have a direct relationship with all our suppliers. So at the moment, in the BlockTech supply network, there's over 200 suppliers across Australia. And think of any major brand that you can mention, we're either working with them or they're scheduled to work with us. The uptake across Australia has been phenomenal because when we work mainly in the commercial sector, so hotels, hospitals and workwear, all of those suppliers, their end of life solution was either burn it or bury it. And so we provide them a direct opportunity to actually showcase their environmental credentials. And we've got some tremendous partners. But we also run, in partnership with our logistics company, a collection service Australia-wide. We run the whole collection. And then across four states, we also have a decommissioning process where we work directly with the National Disability Service, the wonderful leading social impact company with the issue, and we also work with the Queensland Correctional Services. And what they do is they provide us services to remove the materials that we wouldn't process. So things like metals, like zips and buttons and those kind of things, we have those removed. So our business is able to collect across Australia. We're able to decommission, work with social partners. And so all that material then gets shredded up and then turns up at our facility in, you know, 200 kilogram bags, just like manufacturing parts, because from our point of view, we are a remanufacturing business. We're about reuse. We're the only company in the world doing that. Every other company from a recycling point of view is buying their textiles in. And so that part of our business creates revenue for us as a business because we're providing a valuable service into our customers. So we have a good, strong, profitable business from that point of view, and we provide a great service back to our customers, but into our social network, into our process. It's advanced chemistry, but we're very cost efficient with how we do things. Most of our plant is automated, so we're not carrying a lot of overhead in labor, but we also have got a very clever chemical separation process. And from that process, so from our 100 kilograms bed sheets, I can create two products. First, that goes through a manufacturing process where it's washed, dried, and then we put it in a melt extrusion machine and turn it into pellets. And those pellets are called brand name Polytex. And that product is currently being used in injection molding in various stages here domestically. And we're now starting to move into the opportunity to work in fiber, but we have to do that offshore. There isn't any fiber spinning capabilities here in Australia. And then the cotton breaks down into a cellulose slurry. And so that's a combination of about 40% cellulose, 60% water, and that water is held within the cells. So it's a great product moving into the agricultural space. And so we've been working in hydro mulch and soil suppression products. And then we've also been using the cellulose into building and construction. So going into concrete, structural stairs, those kind of things to either add environmental benefits, but also some strength value and also the lightweight. We've got some opportunities into some different building materials that I can't release at this present moment. But there's a huge opportunity here in this country for businesses, manufacturers at the moment who are looking for that next opportunity to come in to either replace an existing polymer product. So if you think about something with paints and mortars where there may be a polymer product, they can place it with a natural product. So they've got green benefits. A point of difference, because these are incredibly unique. You can't get Polytex and Celltex anywhere else in the world. These are really unique products. So this is a great opportunity from a market point of view. But they also provide the value back into those manufacturing products from an equal perspective from buying a virgin point of view. So very simple business model. You know, we get revenue from our front end because we provide a service. We have costs from our manufacturing point of view, but then I have two products to sell, Polytex and Celltex, into the market. And the uptake in domestically has been great. Given that also we're moving into areas such as agriculture, building products, there is some regulation. So we've got a lot of trials underway at this present moment, but the interest in the marketplace is well and truly will outstrip our demand. So it's incredibly exciting.
Another company we've had on the program, Samsara Eco, it's a fellow chemical recycler, well, among other things, some sorts of textiles. Do you see a company like that as a competitor or friend or both?
No, Bill, we need more companies like Samsara and BlockTex. Like I said, there's up to 1 million tons of textiles going to landfill here in Australia. Globally, you know, in the next couple of years, probably be upwards of 130 million tons. We need more investment in companies like ours to get to scale. The technology exists. BlockTex and Samsara are different in our technology, maybe not so much in our business model, different technology. Samsara is an enzymatic process, whereas we're a chemical process. So we're slightly different from that point of view. BlockTex has jumped to that commercial scale. Samsara is, you know, in the process of building their pilot facility and going from there. But equally, there's opportunities for BlockTex and Samsara to work together, to work on solving challenges, but equally reinventing recycling supply chain. You know, business as usual has to evolve, and there'll be times where BlockTex will be the better solution. There might be times when Samsara might be the better solution, but equally, there's times where BlockTex and Samsara could be together working on a process to move forward. We're having those conversations internationally with other companies who are similar. That's the next stage of things going forward. But we're all friends. You know, I speak to all the other recyclers around the world. We're in groups together. It's all about working together on our own businesses, but working collaboratively to develop a industry, textile recycling industry here in Australia, but equally around the world. And that's the really important thing. And I think as government starts to add policy and wrap around that, that will really ignite that. And then the next phase will be getting that private money into these investments so we can scale the business, because It's not so much these technologies don't exist anymore. That's past. They do exist. They exist on shore and they exist at scale and they can get bigger. And that's only a matter of time and investment because the demand is there.
And so from the earliest articles I've read about you guys and from your current material, I've seen mentions of you pursuing a licensing model to expand. Could you let me know, if you're able to say, how progress has been on that front?
Oh, absolutely. The licensing has always been at the start of our journey. We first needed to develop technology. We need to get commercial scale and we need to operate it. And we've executed those things. Having been here building this plant over the last couple of years, whilst that's been fun, building one plant every 2 years does not meet the 130 million tons going to landfill around the world. So a licensing model, working with key partners both here in Australia and around the world, makes a lot more sense because we can build more plants quicker and we can start to meet the demand of the recycling needs, but also the increasing demand, either whether that's through businesses wanting recycled material or a government legislation, that we're going to need to meet that demand. So it's pointless being able to kind of go, we want more recycled product if we can't produce it. And so from a licensing point of view, it's something we've been continually talking with our strategic partners around the world, and that continues to be at the forefront. I'm not a young man anymore, and I'd like to see many more of these plants around. And so I think as we start to showcase to the world that textile recycling is at commercial scale and we are creating product, then there's more and more interest in validation. But BlockTex is ready. We continue to do the work, and we're open to anybody who's interested in having those kind of conversations.
And another thing I'd like to ask you about is the subject of scale-up manufacturers, which is a category I guess you'd fit within. We've had a conversation recently about the need to scale a lot more businesses. Most manufacturers in Australia are on the smaller side of things, and if you're small, it limits you in terms of a lot of things. So we need more companies to be aspirational and get out of the SME category and commercialize new technologies and all the flow-on benefits attached to that. There was a recent report from Industry Innovation Science in Australia arguing as much. I wanted to get your point of view, please, as a scale-up. What are some of the things that would help you in that regard and would help other companies similar to yourself, a growing technology-based company that has a lot of potential but is operating in Australia where there are obvious challenges?
Yeah, great question. So innovation is hard. It's hard in every stage. This continual proving of either your idea, of your business model, of you as the founder, of the market opportunity, those kind of things. It's even harder when you're talking about manufacturing because you need hard capital and you need patient capital. And so hard capital, patient capital, but also that's deployed into an emerging industry. And so all those three things together kind of in Australia makes it harder for investors who are looking for a quick turnover, a difficult place to invest. Where in our space, in the recycling space, where we can accelerate this is, and we're seeing this now, is where government policy starts to lead this because it helps to validate the opportunity for the marketplace. So if the technology is successful and can scale, the market is already there to move to. So it de-risks the opportunity for those investors. I often say to the government, it's like grants are wonderful, and we've achieved a couple of grants, Australia commercialization grant and a grant from the Queensland government, which was really welcome at time of scaling. But equally, a contract, a procurement contract for our manufactured products at times can have a greater value back into the marketplace because I can then take that back into investor and say, if you invest this X amount of money, that allows us to get to this scale. That scale is already mandated into a customer. And so it protects the public funds. It holds innovators like you and I to account that we have to deliver on that product, but also de-risk for the investor. And so I think they're the greatest challenge we have in here because we don't have that robust model. We've got a very strong business as usual. We've got a lot of markets who operate in regards to owning as much scale in that market as possible. But we're coming in with a new industry that has actually got plenty of headroom. It needs investment, but also needs collaboration amongst those actors. And that's why I regard Samsara as a competitor, more as a collaborator and a supporter. So those kind of things are a little bit different to what business as usual is thinking. It's like, well, I don't want to let you into my marketplace. You may steal some of my business. What innovation should do and what our kind of business will do is we will scale the market and you will provide more and more opportunities into ancillary businesses. And I think that's how we've got to be thinking about this going forward. And so, yeah, so it comes down to capital investment, patient capital to open up those markets. supported by government policy setting direction to say, okay, 10% procurement this year, 20% in 3 years' time. 10 and 20% of government procurement is a pretty large amount. And then when if you're looking at the products we produce across four industries, there's a lot of scope for that recycled material to go into. But equally, the benefit we do forget is that all that material isn't going to landfill. And so you're reducing the cost to local councils, you're reducing the environmental impact to us as, you know, citizens of Australia.
As we're talking about innovation, I'd like to ask you a sort of stock question for the series themed around Australia's 50 most innovative manufacturers. What's your personal definition of innovation? How do you understand it? Because everyone has a different spin on it, I guess.
Yeah. So for me, my personal idea of innovation is something that benefits society. It's an innovation that changes the direction of society in a positive way for the future. It's one where like other actors can get involved. They can build things from or into or supporting off. So analogy is I remember buying the first iPhone and like look at 16, 17 iPhones that have integrated the iPhone is into our everyday life. But equally, whilst Apple is the manufacturer of the iPhone, there's all these apps that I have on my phone that have been built by these other people who have been brought into this ecosystem. It's enhanced my everyday. I can pay for items with my phone, trips. I can communicate with my family. I can be tracked by my wife when I'm out riding my bicycle. Like there's any number of things. So for me, those kind of innovations, not innovations that don't actually provide any evolution of the industry. If it's just an innovation to keep business as usual controlled, that to me is not innovation. That's just a business strategy.
Another broad issue is the topic of industry research collaboration, that old chestnut, and one for as long as I've been paying attention, I've been hearing Australia needs to do better at, we don't collaborate, we don't trust each other, yada, yada, yada. There are counterexamples, but the narrative persists. So I'd like to know your thoughts as a company based on technology, which university and CSIRO had a hand in developing. What are your points of view on what needs to happen for collaboration with universities and others to be a success? What worked for you, and are there any lessons we can learn from that perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. I think BlockTex is a real success of collaboration between universities and private business. We've worked with, as you mentioned, CSIRO, absolutely strong relationship with UT. A lot of our work was done in partnership with those guys, in particular into the pilot scale plant, University of Queensland. We've worked closely. We've worked with Deakin. There's a few others that I'm probably going to forget to mention, but we embrace it. We embrace it in a couple of ways because what we're trying to solve was something that hadn't been solved before, and the knowledge was scattered across different areas, both domestically and internationally. We also need to find the right partners to get to the next day to know the answer to the first question, and that opens up what the second question is. Second question expertise may be somewhere else. And because we're dealing with polyester, which is a polymer, and cotton, which is a natural plant base, those expertise actually sat in different universities at times. And so working with that was really rewarding. But it was also, there was times when we had to both acknowledge that sometimes the business language wasn't being understood by the scientist, and sometimes the science language wasn't being understood by the business people. And what in our experience, the BlockTex experience, all the partners we've worked up to date, the relationship has been really open and really understanding. And there's been times when we have to kind of sit back and say, I've got no idea what you're trying to say to me. Can you explain that? But there was also a great knowledge exchange. So not only from us understanding the opportunities in the science and where we're trying to take it, but also with a lot of questions back from the scientists at various levels to try and understand how we could commercialize our business and what we are trying to think. And so that knowledge exchange happened really readily. I think where some of the challenges happen, and it didn't quite happen with us, but I have heard anecdotally around the place, where there is a unnecessary argument over the IP at a stage where you're a long way from being a commercial scale. And I think there needs to be an understanding or some sort of Australianness handshake agreement to kind of get to a point where you can kind of go, you're not arguing over something that may actually not exist. It may not be possible. I think that's where things get stymied. I think we've got to be careful of that. If everybody enters into the agreement in good faith, well, then, you know, that's where we need to kind of go. When we start to kind of looking at it from the perspective of what can I get out of this, then that just caps innovation. It caps perspective. it makes people more protective of things, and it stymies the opportunity to move into spaces that actually you don't know you need to move into. So I think that's clearly important. But equally, you often hear all about great discoveries that have come out of laboratories, and certainly in the space we're working in, that happens just about weekly. There is a big gap between the discovery in laboratory and getting that to commercial scale. There is so many hurdles to get through, and so much time and so much effort by everyone that has to happen, that we have to be mindful of not getting wrapped up with the discovery and forgetting that the whole idea was to build something that actually provided value back into society in what other way. And so if you can't agree at that at an early stage with your business partners, with the university or businesses, that this is just a step in a long journey, then you probably need to think about how you kind of structure that, because a discovery in the laboratory is fantastic, but getting it to commercial scale where somebody wants to buy the product, that's a long road, right? And that's the reality. And I think that's where the kind of understanding needs to happen. So yes, businesses need to be probably more understanding of science, but equally science needs to realize that, you know, once you take your lab coat off and you walk outside that door, there's a whole rest of the journey still to go. And I think that's collaborative. But what you're saying is incredibly important, and we should do more about this in this country. And I know that there's a lot of initiatives that kind of go forward and they kind of get stymied. But I want to encourage people to say, well, you know, BlockTex has kind of got from that stage. It wasn't perfect. We learned a lot. But we would encourage more and more entrepreneurs to really engage with the academia in this country, because it is actually quite excellent.
And the last question I'd like to ask you is the standing closing question. And that is, what's one issue within manufacturing that isn't getting the attention it deserves?
I think, as you mentioned before, I think innovation doesn't get the attention it deserves. I think at times, and for a bunch of reasons, but let's keep a high level, innovation gets stymied because it's business as usual. And often business as usual looks at innovation as kind of a nice to have, as what it should be, a business mandate. We've seen a lot of disruption. You know, I've been around before the internet, and look how that's changed our lives. AI is now the next step to start to continue to change that. The global pandemic created a huge problem across manufacturing because people weren't at work. And so automation has come into that. That's improved our way of working. But without those big inflection points, would some industries actually evolve? And I think what you have to do as a business be thinking, where are we going to be in 5 years and what does that look like? And BlockTex has always been about being digital first and being all about innovation. So yes, we need to build a plant. Yes, it needs to deliver product each day. Yes, it needs to operate a certain way. But it's like every day you walk out on the floor, my entire team is going, we could do this better. What about this? Is there another way to do this? What would this look like in the second plant? What would we take into the second plant? What would be the stages of evolution in regards to taking this from 4,000 tons to 10,000 tons to 50,000 tons to 100,000 tons? What does that look like? Then that feeds back into, as I said, that entire before the gate business. So at 4,000 tons, I need 47,000 garments turning up to my business every day. And so that's the reality. You don't just call up a distributor and say, send me a bunch of nuts and bolts. We've got to kind of aggregate that. So as we scale our capacity, when we think about innovation, we scale our entire business model. And I think businesses can create a lot of opportunity in the marketplace by doing business as usual, absolutely. But how do you add more value back into your business as usual, add other revenue streams? And often what it takes is, and I think Australian business could do better at this, you've got to lean over the fence and talk to the guy next door. You've got to go out and talk to your competitors. Where's the opportunity to collaborate? Where's the opportunity to get involved in your organizations to drive the industry forward? When was the last time you spoke to your local member to say, hey, you know, why do we do it this way? How can the government help? We have to be activists to grow industry. And so business as usual in this country can stymie the innovation. You know, we are a country of innovators, but sometimes you kind of look, are we really? Are we really in this, you know, what's holding us back? And so I think we are, but I think there's an opportunity for industries to really start to think about, how much money am I spending each year on R&D? Now you're kind of going, I've got a 10% mandate. Am I spending that? And so I think that's what's going to drive it forward, but also the collaboration within your industry. How do you grow the size of the pie as opposed to fighting over the same pie?
Right on. Well, those are thoughts that echo mine, though that's not interesting, but I love hearing people who have what I consider a good attitude. It's been great to speak to you, Graeme. Thanks for making the time, and a pleasure to have you as a guest on AU Manufacturing Conversations.
Thanks, Brent. It's been a pleasure. It's great to be involved in Australian manufacturing, and hopefully we're going to be, you know, the next layer that is opportunity to build a new industry in an area that is sadly lacking, particularly to build on the shoulders of all those guys who have gone before us. And so it's an exciting time.